The 7th of October with Kathleen Hagler.
Okay.
Okay. So here we are in Inverness, and you said you'd talk about your life. So tell me about when and where you were born. And I'm just going to let you talk, and then I'll prompt you if it stops. Your name was Hagler, that's from your family.
That's my father, and right. That's all I know about him.
Right.
I know his name.
Yeah.
And I know his approximate age.
Uh-huh.
I think he was 8 or 9 years older than my mother.
Mm.
So I know that my mother was born in 1914.
Yeah.
And that's all. I don't know when in 1914 or where in 1914. I don't know anything.
So her name was your grandmother's name? Her maiden name was your grandmother's name?
Yeah.
Right. And that was the name of the husband that had gone off, the gambler?
Yes.
You know,
I mean, as far as I know, he may have been still alive when I was living with my granny.
Yeah.
I have no idea. He may have been dead. I don't know. I was never told.
Do you know what your granny's name was?
S-T-E-R-N. But listen, as I said, my granny's younger sister survived. Her grandson, my second cousin, in Hungary, with whom I have a very good relationship even today.
Yeah.
He never found out that he was Jewish until he was 20 years old.
Wow. From a religious grandmother as well.
But a totally non-religious mother.
Yeah.
He was 20 years old before he found out that he came from a Jewish family.
Wow.
I mean, so my granny and my aunt were not the only ones who kept everything a secret.
Yeah. So presumably once, after the Holocaust, it was just too dangerous to say anything to anybody about anything in it.
I was about 14 years old when I sort of decided all by myself that maybe it's not a good idea to let people know that I'm Jewish.
Mm.
I don't know how I reached that conclusion. Because there was never any doubt about it. I always knew that I was Jewish.
Yeah.
But somehow I reached the conclusion that letting people know that I'm Jewish is not a very good idea. I was born towards the end of 1942 in what turned out to be several countries. At that time it was Hungary. It was in its turn Hungary, then the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Then it became the Slovakian part of Czechoslovakia. Then it became Hungary again. Then it was part of the Soviet Union. And now it's the Ukraine.
Wow.
I know. I haven't moved around. It's the place that moved around. The borders.
Okay, so.
But I never actually lived there. I grew up in Budapest. My grandmother, my mother, and her sister all lived in Budapest. When my mother was 19 years old, she was very ill, typhoid, typhus, or however you want to call it, and nearly died. When she was recovering, she was sent to a sanatorium in the mountains, and that's where she met my father, and they got married, and they lived where he was from, that area, the Carpathian Basin, which kept changing borders every other, not every other century, more or less every other decade. I had a brother who was 6 years older than I, and a baby sister. I never knew anybody. My father was taken to, I don't know where, but he was taken in 43 before my sister was born. He never even knew he had another child. My mother, my brother, and I were taken into the Munkács ghetto. The name of the place where I was born was Munkács in Hungarian. It's Mukachevo, I think, in Russian. I don't know if there is another name in Ukraine, and it must be the same. It was a place with a lot of Jews. 30 to 40% of the population were Jewish, and hardly anybody survived. Some adults survived. As far as I know, only one other child, Julie, survived. In early spring 44, when my brother was 8 years old, my sister was a few weeks old, and I was a year and a half old, I was stolen out of the Munkács ghetto and taken to my aunt and granny in Budapest. And within a few days of that, the ghetto was emptied and the whole population of the ghetto were taken to Auschwitz. Not sure if anybody from that last shipment Auschwitz actually survived.
Right. So what was your grandmother's background? What do you know about that?
Nothing really. Nothing was ever told to me about anything ever. I don't know why things were kept a secret, but everything was a secret. The only things that I do know is she was the eldest of 8 children, with the youngest 10 years younger, and those were the only two who survived the Holocaust, my granny and her younger sister. All the other 6 were sometime, somehow killed during the Holocaust. My granny and her younger sister were the only two who actually lived in Budapest, and they were the only two who survived. And my only relations are the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of my granny's younger sister that I know of. There might be great-children, great-grandchildren of the other 6 that I don't know their names, I don't know where they lived, I don't know if they were married, I don't know if they had children, I know nothing about them. Absolutely nothing. The other thing I know about my granny, which is a big, big secret that was told to me on my 16th birthday, is that my granny was divorced. Totally unheard situation in a religious Jewish family. But apparently, her husband was a gambler. And he gambled away 2 businesses. So my granny, in order to be able to finance the bringing up of her 2 daughters, had to divorce him. The only reason I was told this was, the way it was put to me was that I should be aware of the fact that gambling may be in my blood and I should never touch it.
Wow.
So that was the big skeleton in the cupboard of the family. Divorce in a religious Jewish family? Unheard of. And I know nothing else. I was never told anything. I was never told anything. We were talking about the plaiting of a challah. I could see my granny doing it every single Friday morning. She never showed me how.
Yeah.
I was never taught to cook, to bake, to clean, to sew, anything.
What else do you remember about Hungary? What sort of house did you live in? Big house, flats, apartment?
We lived in a big city. There were private houses where I never knew anybody who lived in a private house. Tenement. Housing was very difficult in Hungary. I think not as bad nowadays, but it was very difficult in Hungary. We had 3 rooms. There was no such thing in Hungary in those days as a sitting room and a bedroom.
Yeah.
You just had so many rooms and every room was used to whatever purpose was necessary. So, for example, in summer, the 3 of us slept in 3 different rooms. In winter, only one of those rooms was heated.
Yeah.
So the all 3 of us slept in the same room. Every room had a bed, a cupboard, a wardrobe, a table. Kitchen and bathroom had their own particular designation, but all other rooms were simply rooms and to be used as you like. I think it has changed now, but that's how it was in those days.
And how did your grandma or your aunt make a living?
They both sewed, and I was never taught to sew. My aunt made ties. She, all her life she worked on making ties for men. This kind of tie and that kind of tie and occasionally a scarf and silk ties and bow ties, and that's what she did.
Yeah.
My granny, by the time I knew her, she was old. Well, she wasn't that old, but for me,
yeah,
as I was a little girl, she was very old. And she didn't have a job as such. But any time any religious Jew died, my granny was notified and she sold the shares.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a religious thing or it's a Hungarian religious yeah. thing. There was a very prescribed way of what the body has to wear yeah. in order to go into the grave.
Yeah.
And my granny did that and got paid for it. And she looked after me, yes. As a matter of fact, on occasion I was sent to my granny had asthma. And occasionally it got bad and she had to be taken to a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And my aunt was working. So occasionally I had to be sent to an orphanage for a few days or sometimes for a few weeks. But then when my granny got better and she got home, then I got home as well.
Wow. So what memories do you have of those times?
Not a lot. I have always been very good and still am very good at forgetting the unpleasant things.
Yeah.
I'm really excellent at it. What I had rickets when I was 3, 4, 5 years old. I don't remember it. Yeah. I know it, but I don't remember it. And I wasn't the only one. Oh, the orphanage was not a Jewish orphanage. It was an orphanage. And there were nuns.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the children were. Maybe some of them were Jewish, maybe some of them weren't. I have no idea. I have no way of knowing. I was very little when that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do remember is other children with rickets who had it much worse than I did.
Right.
I recovered very well, and really only my teeth were affected.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember children whose bones were very badly affected, and every time they had a knock, they had a broken bone which would not heal well. And I can remember little children with 3 elbows in an arm.
Yeah.
That's what I remember. And I also remember having to fight for food. When a war is over, things don't go back to normal 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
I was only 2 and a half when the Second World War was over. But food was not back to normal until considerably later, years later. But then even here in Britain, you still had those rationing.
Yeah.
You still had rationing well into the 50s.
Yeah.
And Britain didn't suffer to the same extent as Central Europe did.
Yeah.
I mean, the war was not actually happening on your streets. The war was happening away from here.
Yeah.
And still, rationing didn't stop until well into the 50s, until maybe 12 years after the war. So when a war is over, it takes years for the situation to go back to what you would call normal. So food was scarce.
And presumably the orphanage kids get it the worst.
I remember huge bowls of boiled tatties, which is what we got, and yogurt with it to cool it down and to, I don't know, that was huge bowls of boiled tatties and yogurt.
Mm.
and be fought for it. Little kids, 4, 5, 6 year old kids,
wow,
fought for it. But then I only spent there a few days, or maybe occasionally 2, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And other children lived there full term. Uh-huh. And other children suffered more. Uh-huh. And other children suffered more from rickets.
Yeah.
And maybe some, I don't know if they survived. But I did. I grew up in Budapest with my granny and my aunt. At the age of 16, my granny, my aunt and I were allowed to leave the country and go to Israel, where I lived until I came to Scotland. I was, I think, 35 when I arrived to Scotland.
So tell me a bit about growing up in Budapest then.
I don't think there is an awful lot to tell. My granny was a very religious lady, so I always knew I was Jewish, never had any doubts about that. However, I didn't know that I didn't have parents. I didn't realize I was supposed to have a father until when I was 6 or 7 years old. In school, the teacher was talking about asking the children about their parents' professions. And when it was my turn, she asked me, what did my father do? So I said, I didn't have a father. So she was very considerate about it, and she asked me whether my father was dead, and I said no. So she asked me if my parents were divorced, which was not a run-of-the-mill thing in those days, and I said no. So she said, well, where is your father? And I said, I never had a father, not knowing that every child is supposed to have a father. So she called in, she gave me a note to take home. And apparently in that note she called my mother in, who I thought was my mother, who wasn't, into the school, and she, I don't know what they discussed, but obviously she told my, who turned out to be my aunt, to tell me my background. So my aunt told me that she was my aunt, not my mother, that my granny was my granny, that my parents were dead, and that was the end of the story. It was not made a big deal out of. I took her clue, I suppose. I didn't make a big deal out of it either. I always called her mum. Until she died, I called her mum.
Yeah.
I didn't know any men. Obviously, I saw them in the street, but at home, I didn't see any men. In our immediate family and friends, there was one man with whom I never really had any contact. But I was quite happy as a child. I loved school. I always liked going to school. I was a curious child, wanted to learn things. So was just happy going to school and happy to sit at home and read books.
Mm.
Never had my nose out of a book.
What languages did you do at school? Was there Russian as well as Hungarian?
Yes, at the age of 10, we started to do Russian. Then, my granny's mother tongue was German.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Austro-Hungarian Empire,
right,
all this area.
So she hadn't moved?
She did move.
Yeah.
Budapest was always the center of Hungary,
yeah,
but she didn't always live there.
Right.
So her mother tongue was German, and my aunt's semi-mother tongue was also German.
Yeah.
So every time they wanted to keep a secret from me, which was very often, you don't tell the child anything.
Yeah.
They spoke German. So I got fed up with that. So when I was about 12, I had 2 little jobs. And I didn't spend the money on sweets or cinema. I spent the money on learning German. In secret.
Wow.
I didn't take me more than 6 months to be able to understand them. I suppose I was very motivated to learn German. So, yeah, Russian when I was 10, then German when I was 12, then I started to learn English when I was 14, and then, of course, Hebrew when I went to Israel. And my mother tongue is Hungarian, so I no longer speak German. No, I still speak German, not very well, but I still do. If I have to, I can. Obviously, I speak Hebrew well, and Hungarian, which is my mother tongue, but not so well. I mean, I was 16 when I left. Mm. So if I have to ask what's for breakfast, my Hungarian is excellent. If I have to discuss the political situation, my Hungarian is useless.
Yeah.
But Russian, I know, I don't speak anymore. I remember little bits and pieces, but I can't say I speak Russian. You don't use it, you lose it.
Mm.
So I left Hungary when I was 16. I never had to speak Russian after that. And it was a long, long time ago. What I was taught is I was taught to read Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. By your grandmother?
By my granny, yes. Not the language. She didn't know the language. But she prayed every single day. 3 times a day, all the holidays, all the prayers were in Hebrew, written in Hebrew, so I was taught to read Hebrew. Not the meaning of the word, not the meaning of a single word, but I was taught to read.
So was there any visible Jewish life in Budapest in the war and after? Could she go out and have a community?
Not that I knew. Mm. There were synagogues, quite a few that I was aware of. My granny went on every Saturday morning. I think sometimes she went to Friday evening as well. She took me with her on all high holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So I was aware of the synagogues. She knew a lot of people in those synagogues. They said hello to her, she said hello to them. I was not introduced and they were not introduced to me, so I didn't know the people. But the education system in Hungary is different. There is elementary school, you start at the age of 6 and you go there for 8 years, so you're 40 when you're finished and then you are streamed. But I was not allowed to be streamed, I was sent to the only Jewish high school in existence in all of Hungary. So there, obviously, I became aware that there was a Jewish community. The other children in my class were Jewish. The teachers were Jewish. But the teachings were not.
Mm.
It was just a totally normal high school, very, very high level, the highest possible stream, as it happens. The only difference was is that we only went to school 5 days a week, not 6, like all the other kids. And on Saturday morning, we went to the school's own little synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to go. But the only great advantage I remember of that is that it was where we met the boys. Because in the school itself, we were totally segregated.
Yeah.
There was a boys' school and a girls' school in the same building, totally segregated.
Mm-hmm.
The boys were on the first floor and the girls were on the second floor, and never the twain shall meet. In the breaks, one break the boys were allowed out into the yard, the other breaks the girls were allowed into the yard. So the only place where we met each other was in the synagogue, where we were also segregated. The boys were sitting on the left and the girls were sitting on the right, but we saw each other.
Wow.
I loved school. However, I started school in September 56.
Mm-hmm.
In October 56, October 56 was the time of the Hungarian Revolution.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. However, I started school in September 56, there were 32 girls in my class. When we went back to school after the revolution in March 57, there were 8 girls in my class.
Wow.
24 left the country with their families. We couldn't do it. My granny was old and not very well. And escaping Hungary was not an easy thing to do. You had to walk for miles to cross the border, so we couldn't do that. So we stayed until we were allowed to leave legally in January 59. Yes. Remember I told you that when I was about 7 years old, our teacher asked us about the profession of our parents?
Yeah.
I didn't know it then, but we discovered it later, what was the purpose of this whole exercise. When I was 7 and a half, going on 8, I got expelled from school. No proper reason for it. I was top of my class, I wasn't playing truant, I was not badly behaved, and I was not the only one expelled. Something like a large percentage, something like 25 to 30% of all the kids were expelled from school, which was made into a special school of excellence. And we eventually discovered why the communist regime decided to expel nearly 30% of all the kids from a particular school of excellence. And the reason for that was that all the kids who were expelled, their parents were sort of middle class, neither peasants nor laborers. Mm. But there may have been a lawyer. In my case, my dead father, mind you, my dead father was an accountant,
right,
which I didn't even know. But apparently, the teacher found out from my aunt, and as a result, I got expelled from the school. But it didn't make any difference because I went to a school which, in my opinion, was better.
Yeah.
Much more pleasant. And did not take into consideration that I was not worthy of being in a school because my father was not a peasant or a laborer.
Wow.
Nice reaction. Yeah. That was the communist regime for you.
So you and your grandma and your aunt all went to Israel together just before she died?
Yes, we went in January 59,
mm-hmm.
and she died in April.
Mm. Happy to have done the journey to the Promised Land and all that?
Very.
Yeah.
Very happy.
Did she feel it was, I'm just putting words into her mouth now, the culmination of what she'd been living for and all that, her religiousness? Did that drive her to go there, or was it partly escaping? Was it like a pull thing or a push thing? Was it getting out of Hungary or getting to Israel?
For my aunt, it was getting out of Hungary. For yeah. my granny, it was getting to the Promised Land.
Yeah.
For me, I didn't want to go. But I didn't have a word. I didn't have a say in the matter.
Yeah.
I did try to have a say in the matter. I wanted to finish school, which would have been another year and a half. And I actually took to my... I loved school.
Yeah.
I always loved school. And she had a word with my aunt and my granny, but they said no. So I had to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my education interrupted, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And of course I got to Israel, and if I wanted to eat, I had to work, so... That was the end of my education until, as an adult, I tried to do something about it.
So going back to Israel, what work did you do when you had to work straight away and couldn't go on to schooling? You're living in kibbutz?
Right? Not then.
Right.
We lived not far from Tel Aviv in a suburb. Well, it had a different name to it, but it's yeah. really like a suburb of Tel Aviv, and I got a job in a cosmetic laboratory as a 16-year-old. And I worked there for quite a while, and then I learned about philately and numismatics, and I worked with stamps and coins for donkey's years and became quite an expert, a recognized expert in the field actually. But I hated living in the city. Mm-hmm. And in my 20s, I went to live in a kibbutz.
You were already an expert in your 20s, a recognized expert.
In a particular field. Yeah. Just philately and numismatics, stamps and coins, that's all. I always like to learn things. I always like to learn things. Even today, I still do.
So did they do all puns and programs for new immigrants at that time?
Yes, for a little while I was in one, and I learned Hebrew very quickly because it was important.
And you already could read it?
I already could read it, yes. Slowly, but it was an advantage, yes. Yeah. My aunt could read it as well, but she never actually learned to speak the language. She tried hard. She did really try her very best. Not everybody is good at learning languages. Yeah. My aunt wasn't. I was very lucky. I happened to be quite good at learning languages, so I did. And I was also young. She was in her 40s. I was a 16-year-old. It's a big difference. Yeah. My granny, of course, never did, but then she only lived there for about 3-4 months.
So that was... What year was it when you went... 1958 when you went
59.
To Israel? 59 when you went to Israel.
Yeah.
So with a lot of other Hungarians leaving at that point?
No. Very few indeed. Maybe 3 or 4 families in the year.
Yeah.
That's all.
So then you worked in the jobs that you've said, and then after a bit you wanted to leave the city and move to the kibbutz. That was with your aunt?
No.
All right.
On my own. Not that easily. It was not acceptable that an unmarried girl... I was 24 when, by the time I went to the kibbutz, so I was not a teenager. But it was not acceptable that an unmarried young woman should leave her family and live on her own. It was not easy, but... I've done it.
Yeah.
And I loved living in the kibbutz. And I lived there for about 10 years. In a kibbutz you do everything and anything. I like that. And I love the kibbutz, and I still do today. But I was kind of getting towards my mid-30s, and I kind of realized that I never stood on my own 2 feet. I went from my aunt's home to the kibbutz. And the kibbutz is also a cocoon.
Mm.
It takes good care of you. It's quite wonderful.
Mm.
But I kind of got to the point where I had to prove to myself that I could stand on my own 2 feet. And it was now or never. I felt it was now or never. I was now getting towards my mid-30s. I was 34 years old, and I felt that if I didn't do it then and there, I would never do it.
Yeah.
And then I had to decide where to go and what to do, and for all kinds of reasons, climate being one of them, a major one actually, political situation at that time being another one, the Levantine life being another one.
The what?
Levantine. Mediterranean.
Right.
Nerves and shouting and... Everything being on high do all the time was something I found very difficult to cope with. I still do today. Well, I don't go to nowadays, but I still did many, many years later when I went to visit. While my aunt was alive and I was living here in Scotland, I still went to visit her every year. And I still found that life very difficult to cope with. Nothing wrong with it. I just don't suit it. You know how life is and what behavior is like?
Well, outside it suits and a lot lots of screaming. People.
It doesn't suit me. Doesn't suit me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing can be done quietly. Everything is done by shouting and screaming. And what bothered me more that people were shouting and screaming all the time is that when I went there, I shouted and screamed myself. Yeah.
What work did you do in the kibbutz, and then what work did you do when you first came here?
In kibbutz, I mostly worked with children.
Yeah.
But I also worked in the kitchen, in the pardes, which is the... There is a special name for it, which I forget at the moment. It's the orchard only for citrus fruit.
Right.
The climate was very difficult for me.
Yeah.
When I first got to Israel, it was January, and the sky was blue and the palm trees were waving in the wind, and I thought, wow, it's beautiful. And they said to me, just wait till it gets to the summer. And then the summer came and I got the shock of my life. And people said, don't worry, you'll get used to it. Well, I never did.
Mm.
Some people can cope with hot climates and some people can't, and I can't. In the kibbutz itself, there was a factory, and the factory sent me a factory for plastic things. And at one point, they sent me to learn about export. And I did. Hungary is a horribly anti-Semitic country. Always has been.
Yeah.
Still is today.
Yeah.
And today, it's getting worse and worse.
And your second cousin carried on living in Hungary.
Oh, yes. I have 4 second cousins in Hungary.
All right.
My granny's sister had 2 daughters as well.
Yeah.
And one of them had a daughter and a son, and the other one had 2 sons. And they have their own children. But it's one of the sons and his daughter that I have more contact with. And the granddaughter, Anna, is the one I have most contact with.
And did you always know? Did you know them in Hungary, or have you?
Yes, I always knew them in Hungary.
And they didn't know they were Jewish, even though they knew your family. Wow.
I knew them in Hungary, yes. They were all younger than me,
yeah.
Seeing as their grandmother was 10 years younger than my grandmother. I went through a course about exporting, and that stood me well when I came here. And I got a job in a factory which manufactured metal detector, and I became export manager there for a few years. In the meantime, I did other things. I got myself a degree in philosophy.
Oh.
Open university.
Yeah.
Finally, I could do what I wanted to do. So when I did my degree here, I did it in philosophy and enjoyed every single moment of it.
Wow.
It became my degree and my passion.
Yeah.
And then in the last maybe 18 years of my working life, I worked as a journalist at the local newspaper. And retired 11 years ago, and I enjoy every moment of my retirement.
What do you do in retirement then? Just to finish off?
I still read a lot. I'm still a bookworm, always have been a bookworm, and still am. I play bridge, and I teach bridge. I do a lot of crafting, and I also teach Hebrew nowadays.
Yeah.
And just enjoy my life. Being retired like being on holiday 24/7. It's wonderful. It's only a pity that you can't enjoy it when you're younger.
Yeah. So how did the teaching Hebrew come about?
Well, because of you, I met certain people who are kind of half Jewish, semi-Jewish, happen to like Israel, happen to go and visit Israel ever so often, and they wanted to learn Hebrew, and they nagged me into it, as it happens, and nagged me into it is about the right way of putting it, and I'm happy doing it. I'm still doing it.
Yeah. So, do you get books from Israel or something like that?
No. Just out of my head.
Yeah.
Okay. So, as it happens, I taught Hebrew before because in the kibbutz for some time, we used to get volunteers mostly from Switzerland or other parts of Europe as well. And some of those occasionally wanted to learn Hebrew, and I was in charge of teaching them. And occasionally we got new kibbutz members. For example, we had a family from America.
Yeah.
And they came without knowing Hebrew, so they had to learn Hebrew as well. So somebody has to help them to learn.
So that's you.
So I did that there as well.
So you're a craftswoman, a Hebrew teacher, a journalist, a stamp and coin person.
Not anymore. But we all do more than one thing throughout our lives.
A philosopher.
We all do many things throughout our lives.
Yeah. So just to finish off, what you didn't do, it's perfect timing, what you didn't do is you didn't tell me the story that you told me in the cafe that time that you wrote in that thing, you know, about the train. So, would you mind just telling me that story? Yeah.
I don't know it.
Yeah.
It's not a fact of life. It's out of my head.
Right.
I know that when I was stolen out of the Munkács ghetto, the person who has done it, who was paid by my granny and my aunt to do it, but who risked his own life to do it, went back a week later, and there was nobody there. So, in that week of nobody, I don't know the date, obviously I was a baby.
Yeah.
Nobody remembered the date, but in that week of end of March, beginning of April, the Munkács ghetto was emptied, and there were 1,000 people there, all of them old people, women and children, because all the fit younger men were taken beforehand. So the only people left there were the old people, the women and the children. They were put on a train to Auschwitz. I don't know what happened on the train. It is just my imagination that is working overtime.
Yeah.
I was not there. Nobody who was there lived to tell the tale. I think that my six-week-old sister, Eva, would have died on that train. I think that my mother could no longer breastfeed her. I think that my mother could no longer breastfeed her because my mother didn't have anything to eat. I do know for a fact, no, not for a fact, but I do know nearly for a fact that when they arrived in Auschwitz 3 or 4 days later, a selection was made. All the old people, all the mothers and their children were taken to the gas chambers immediately.
Mm.
All the older children, maybe 15, 16-year-olds, especially the boys, and all the younger women without children, may have survived for a few more weeks. They didn't come back. That is what I do know. I have written about that.
Mm.
A friend of mine who lives in London, who is 10 years older than I am, was on one of those trains.
Wow.
And she came back. She has read what I have written. And she says that what I have written was too optimistic. I have, for example, written that there was a bucket with water on the train. This friend of mine, who was on one of those trains, she said, no, there was a bucket, an empty bucket, to be used as a toilet. There was no bucket of water. She said there was not enough room in the wagon for people to lie down to sleep overnight. She says that people were suffocated on the train because they were lying on each other. They were suffocating each other. So even though my idea, my imagination of how horrible it was not horrible enough.
Mm.